Enjoying the nickname Joe, she built and raced powerboats, and in the 1920s was the fastest woman on water.
My therapist and I discovered that I don't like men. I just don't like them. We did like Rorschach tests, and all mine were happy women and miserable, terrible men.
How somebody walks into a room or how somebody presents themselves can be magic. And I think that a lot of LGBT people, because we have to learn how to present ourselves in the world, can take that on as yet another canvas to kind of spread some of their own magic.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Taiwan's top court mandates marriage equality, Miami's World Out Games shocker abandons athletes, and our merry meeting with a satirical sodomite. Those stories and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Wendell Jones.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBT communities around the world for the week ending May 27th, 2017. Taiwan's Constitutional Court issued its much-anticipated ruling on May 24th that will almost certainly make the island the first jurisdiction in Asia to open civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Taiwan's highest court ruled that denying civil marriage to same-gender couples is unconstitutional. Two of the court's 15 justices filed dissenting opinions, and one recused himself. Lawmakers have 2 years to make legislative changes to conform to the ruling, but marriage equality becomes automatic if they fail to act. Of Taiwan's two major political parties, members of the relatively queer-friendly governing Democratic Progressive Party haven't been able to agree on how to open marriage to lesbian and gay couples. Some have wanted to amend the existing civil code, while others have supported new legislation applying only to same-gender couples. Wu Dianyi, the chairman-elect of the other and more conservative major party, Kuomintang, announced his support for the Constitutional Court's decision almost immediately. The 69-year-old had previously called the idea of marriage equality horrible and creepy, charging that it would ruin our traditional family values. Most members of his party have voiced similar opposition. The chairperson-elect was quick to say that his new support for equality was his own personal opinion and that he is not in the position to represent the whole party.
The hero of this story, Chai Chia-wei, challenged the Taipei city government's rejection of his and his longtime partner's application to marry in 2013. The pioneering activist was arrested in 1986 after publicly declaring that he's gay, while Taiwan was still under martial law. He told the New York Times that this week's ruling should certainly offer some encouragement to different societies to consider following in Taiwan's footsteps and giving gays and lesbians the right to marry. The landmark ruling also writes protections from bias based on sexual orientation into the Constitution, defines same-gender attraction as an immutable characteristic that requires heightened scrutiny for future cases involving sexual orientation, and specifies that procreation is obviously not an essential element of marriage. Wayne Lin is chairperson of the Taiwan Tongji Hotline Association. During an interview on the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's radio program RN Drive on May 25th, he confidently predicted a fairly fast track for the mandated marriage equality legislation.
We now already have two civil code amendment proposal in our Congress already. These two proposals passed the committee review half a year ago and haven't been, entering into next process, party negotiation, then scheduled for second reading, third reading. So I think if our legislators can restart the whole process, then we got pretty good chance to get this done by this year, actually.
In more shocking news this week, one of the globe's two major international athletic gatherings for LGBTQ people, the World Out Games, abruptly canceled most of the competitive sporting events on May 26th, along with the opening and closing ceremonies literally hours before the 10-day gathering in Miami, Florida was set to begin. While more details are sure to emerge, the bombshell revelation came via a short Facebook post from the event's board of directors. It is with deep regret that, due to financial burdens, World Out Games must cancel its sports programming and opening and closing ceremonies, with the exception of soccer, aquatics, and country western dance, the text reads. The Human Rights Conference and cultural programs will continue as planned. Hundreds of infuriated athletes had already arrived in Miami and had booked hotel rooms. Others actually got word in midair. Peter Clancy, a track and field competitor from Belgium, told the Miami Herald that he was 2 hours away from landing when he saw the news online. Last-minute notice, he said, shows a complete lack of respect for the participants, and especially those of us traveling from other continents.
Tourism leaders and elected officials had lobbied to bring the Out Games to Miami, the first time the event was held in the United States. Local government agencies and corporate sponsors invested hundreds of thousands of dollars to support Out Games. The city of Miami alone, which is said to have spent more than $200,000 to promote the event, is demanding an audit. Initial reports suggest that organizers failed to raise the funding that they had assured government officials and corporate sponsors they'd get to fully support the 10-day event. The first World Out Games, licensed by the Gay and Lesbian International Sport Association, took place in Montreal in 2006. The other major global queer sporting and cultural event, the Quadrennial Gay Games, is organized by the Federation of Gay Games and was first held in San Francisco in 1982.
Attacks on the lives of LGBTQ people in Muslim-majority Indonesia continue to escalate. Two young men in Aceh, the province governed by strict Islamic law, each received 83 painful and humiliating lashes this week in a public square for engaging in private consensual adult gay sex, with hundreds of onlookers cheering each stroke of the cane. The rest of Indonesia is governed by secular law, and same-gender lovemaking is not a crime. However, gay people are prosecuted under the country's strict anti-pornography laws. 141 men suspected of violating those laws were arrested in a May 21st raid on a sauna in the capital city of Jakarta. At least four of the detainees were foreigners. Police officials say that they're being treated as witnesses. 10 local people will be criminally charged, including the sauna's owner and several staff members, along with two customers caught engaging in mutual oral sex. They each face up to 10 years in prison. This week's raid seems to build on arrests last month of 14 men at an alleged gay sex party in Indonesia's second-largest city, Surabaya.
Indonesia's LGBTQ community has been under siege in the past several months, with vicious anti-queer rhetoric by several high-level government officials fueling increased societal prejudice. Apparently inspired by the raids in Jakarta and Surabaya, police officials in the country's most populous province, West Java, announced plans this week to set up a task force to monitor queer activity among its 47 million residents. Police Chief Anton Charlian said that gay people have a disease of the body and soul and will not be accepted in society. He said the role of the task force would be to look for places where LGBTQ people might be holding social gatherings. It would include intelligence specialists who can uncover secret parties, he said, and would also depend on reports from the public. Violators, he added, will face the law and heavy social sanctions. The nation's constitutional court is currently considering a petition by Islamic hardliners to specifically criminalize not only homosexuality in Indonesia, but also adultery.
In this week's developments in the purge of gay and bisexual men in the Russian region of Chechnya, Human Rights Watch has published a comprehensive report about the pogrom that confirms that it's been orchestrated by the Chechen government. The 29-page report, released on May 26th, specifically names Magomed Daudov, the Speaker of Chechnya's parliament, who, it said, seems to have played a key role in both securing and giving approval from the Chechen leadership to set in motion the purge. The Global Human Rights Group said three of the victims it interviewed for the report said they saw Daudov personally visiting two of the reported six so-called gay concentration camps in the region. Some accounts say more than 300 gay and bisexual men have been rounded up and tortured until they identify their gay friends. More than two dozen deaths have been reported, some during torture, and others in honor killings at the hands of their shamed fundamentalist Muslim family members.
Chechen leader Ramzan Kadyrov bragged to reporters that gay people would be exterminated in his region before Ramadan begins at the end of May. And while predominantly Muslim Chechnya has autonomy in some government functions, it's still part of Vladimir Putin's Russian Federation. Putin claimed in early May to have ordered an investigation into what he called rumors of the gay genocide. But Novaya Gazeta, the independent Russian newspaper that first broke the story of the purge, reported this week that when a federal investigating committee arrived at a location identified in press accounts and by former inmates as one of the camps, they found the site buried in construction debris and not a soul in sight. The committee was then denied entry to what was thought to be a new location because training is taking place. The Russian LGBT network, which has helped more than 40 Chechen men flee the region, fears that inmates are being moved to new detention facilities in order to maintain continued secrecy of the ongoing operation. Chechen authorities said they've found no objective proof of the purge. A spokesman for Kadyrov originally claimed that there were no gay people in Chechnya, and if there were, their relatives would send them somewhere from whence they could not return.
But finally, jurors for the Queer Palm Award at the Cannes Film Festival were the latest to protest the Chechen genocide. Statements by several world leaders have condemned the purge, and vigils, rallies, and other demonstrations have been held in cities around the world in protest. The Cannes jurors posed on the red carpet this week at a screening of 120 Beats Per Minute, a film chronicling the early days of ACT UP and AIDS activism in 1990s Paris. They held signs showing pink triangles with words under them, including Chechnya, No More, and Silence Equals Death.
That's News Wrap for the week ending May 27th, 2017. Produced by Steve Pride, written by Greg Gordon, and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap from This Way Out is brought to you by you.
Help keep us on the air and in your ears at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast. For This Way Out, I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Michelle Yater.
Now available on CD or by download.
Attention, all LGBT, U.S. history buffs, collectors, and listener supporters.
You can now own a very special edition of This Way Out.
Here's a taste.
Today, being gay is not a crime.
This is going to lead to the legalization of same-sex marriage.
Children born today will grow up in a world without DOMA.
This is social engineering by a court.
Yes, it is, Mr. President.
Congratulations.
Today, some of the darkest 24 hours in our nation's history.
It's the day I finally get to look at the man that I love and finally say, will you please marry me?
From outlaws to in-laws traces the legal evolution of the U.S. Supreme Court.
From the decriminalization of private consensual adult gay sex in 2003 to making marriage equality the law of the land in 2015.
This special edition features the voices of dozens of equality advocates over those years who made the journey possible.
Despite always outspoken opposition along the way.
From outlaws to in-laws also includes a wide variety of thematic music.
You'll find all the info you need about this very special edition of This Way Out at
thiswayout.org.
Well, isn't that special?
Masculinity to me not only is an affront, but it's an abuse. Trouble.
Giggles from one broke gay to two broke girls. But first, one lavishly wealthy lesbian.
Marion Carstairs, eccentric British powerboat racer. Coming up now on the Rainbow Minute. Born in London in 1900, Marion Carstairs constantly reinvented herself. As she grew up, she wore men's clothes, got tattooed, and was open about her attraction to women. She married once for a short time, but only to inherit a Standard Oil fortune. Enjoying the nickname Jo, she built and raced powerboats, and in the 1920s was the fastest woman on water. In 1934, she bought her own 800-acre island in the Bahamas, which she named Whale Key. Roads, houses, and a harbor were built, creating her own empire. There, she lavishly entertained her friends and lovers, including Mabel Mercer and Tallulah Bankhead. Oddly enough, Carstairs always carried her small leather doll named Lord Todd Wadley, whom she treated as her dearest friend. The Rainbow Minute is produced by Judd Proctor and Brian Burns and recorded in the studios at WRIR in Richmond, Virginia, and read by volunteers like me, John DeBoer.
And I'm Maria.
And together we're Zrazy.
And we're crazy about This Way Out.
If laughter is the best medicine, This Way Out's Wenzel Jones and Abby Dees have a prescription from a queer specialist who treats patients from New York to Hollywood.
I love to laugh loud and long and clear. I love to laugh. It's getting worse every year. The more I laugh, the more I fill with glee. And the more the glee, the more I'm a merrier me.
Justin Sayre, live and in studio.
Hi, everybody.
You do so much. How do you describe yourself?
I'm a writer. That I'd probably say that first. And
primarily.
Then, you know, kind of, I don't know. I think a writer with a strange Edie Beale persona.
The
yes.
meeting of the International Order of Sodomites, almost a New York institution
yes,
now.
Yes,
which
oh,
first
yeah.
of all raises the question, am I a member?
Oh,
we can
sure.
talk about that. Okay.
Yeah, sure.
And this is in New York.
I've just met you, but I guarantee you've done some sodomiting in your day.
I don't think my mother is listening, so
I'm
yes.
sure. It's a broad definition when we get down to it.
For those of us who have not had the pleasure,
uh-huh.
tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the International Order of Sodomites is a centuries-old organization promoting the lives and legacies of the LGBTQ community, of which I am the chairman. So every month for the last 7 years, we've done a monthly meeting where we've celebrated a different gay icon, we've talked about gay politics, we've had the best of Broadway and downtown performance artists kind of come and be part of our show. And it's been an amazing trip and journey for the and everybody involved. It's been a wonderful time.
The cool thing is that you can see a lot of your pieces from the meetings
oh, yeah.
on YouTube, which
yes.
I had great fun just going to your channel and watching them.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know this is a formal organization meeting, and we don't like to delve into my personal life, but boy, do I have a whopper for you. Girl, I want to believe in love. I really do. But I'm afraid that I'm turning into like one of those hidden gay novels of the 30s, where they're all like, faggot should die before 30. You know, they're just like dragon lady streetwalkers with red ties played by Clifton Webb. That's some deep cuts, but you should look it up. It'll be very rewarding. You know, it's just like all doom and gloom. And I read those as a young gay person, and I'm starting to fall back into the like, oh, two men can't love each other. Look what they do to each other. Sexually, that's what it means. Which I think is delightful, actually, but, you know, people in the 30s were different. And I don't want it to encroach my belief that, like, oh, somewhere out there there's some lovely man, or a few lovely men who I could build a life with and then leave. In fact, I... trouble. Because I'm seeing images you're not seeing. I'm thinking of the last one I left, and I was like, that was a wise decision. All right, let's get into it. My therapist and I discovered that I don't like men. I just don't like them. We did like Rorschach tests, and all mine were happy women and miserable, terrible men. And I've always been like this. Like, masculinity to me not only is an affront, but it's an abuse. I'm just like, oh, what are you doing in my house? Don't you see all the ceramic birds I have? Why would you come in here? Get out, get out! I don't find any of it attractive, any. My friend one time got me a DVD of Frat Boy for my birthday. Thinking I would, you know, who doesn't love a frat boy? I don't. I literally returned it to him 2 days later and was like, too much shouting. Too much shouting, and none of the bottom smiled, which is important to me.
This is something I've sort of wanted to ask kind of every comic that I like.
Sure.
I don't think it's possible to be a good comic and be stupid, but you're kind of a cut above. You've got literary references, arcane cultural references.
Sure.
Do you ever worry that the audience just isn't going to get it?
No, I don't care. I mean, that's kind of the joke. We have a joke at the shows. If you don't get three references in
that's
a row, you get to drink.
I'm in.
Until you get another reference.
And just laugh along.
But I think you buy a lot on the fact that I have a silly voice. So if I make a Martha Tilton joke that two other people get, you're like, oh, Martha Tilton, that sounds funny. Who the hell was she? No one knows.
That's not the only thing that you're doing. When we,
asked
you, so what are you up to? And it was like this litany of things.
Oh, sure.
So you're a writer for Two Broke Girls.
Two Broke Girls,
you
yes.
have a fabulous blog called... Podcast. I meant to say podcast.
Yes, I have a podcast. It's called Sparkle and Circulate.
That's such a great name. Did it just come to you? Or?
No. Actually, one of my producers said it. He's like, well, you know, it's advice. Because, you know, I love when people bring me things. He's like, I think Elsie DeWolf said it's the great thing to do at a party is sparkle and circulate. And I thought, oh, that's magic. You know.
Elsie DeWolf.
Elsie
yes,
DeWolf.
That.
Yes, exactly.
We'll just leave that there.
You wrote a young adult novel
yes.
called Husky.
Uh-huh. It's going to be a series of four books.
And why this particular genre? Because you don't strike me as a YA author.
No,
At first glance.
Well, in a very funny turn of events, my friend wrote the gay version of Mad Libs.
Oh.
And he said, oh, will you come and do a Mad Lib? We're going to do this live event for this gay version of Mad Libs. Will you come and do this event? You're funny, and I'm sure you could think of an adjective. And I said, oh, could I? And I went, and his editor from Penguin was there and said, Justin's really funny. We should talk to him about writing a book. So they did, and then I sent in a sample chapter of kind of a YA novel, and they signed me to a 3-book deal. So.
Had you been working on that chapter, or
no.
did it just come out of...
No.
I mean, how did you go, okay, someone wants to do a YA thing, I think I'll just write a chapter here. Like, what was your
process? Yeah, I just thought, well, they said about like a young gay kid, and I was like, sure. You know, poverty will put you in a lot. So I was just like, sure. How many? 6 pages? Tomorrow. You know, like I just wrote it. And then it kind of was a discovery of, oh, this is how this works.
How did you have to change things for, say, an adult audience?
Well, I think people have the same ideas. Like I have. My grandfather's has a 6th grade education. So when he says good, that means marvelous. You know, it's like you just, it's where he's operating from. So a lot of times, and I think especially for writing this YA book, it was really not about dumbing it down. It was just kind of giving the voice references and an understanding of where he was. So he's talking about like existential crises, but he's just trying to get through study hall, you know?
And Lord knows we have existential crises
absolutely.
In study hall. That's no joke.
I was really, after I finished, I was like, wow, I'm a 12-year-old still. I was terrified.
Well, and this is an age group that considers Flowers in the Attic a rite of passage, which is one of the most disturbing things I've ever read.
Deeply disturbing.
Now, one of the things I encountered when yes, researching you.
Oh, my.
I love this Night of a Thousand Judies, but what is it?
Oh, so when we first started the meeting, it is a show about community. And we thought, and when I say we, I'm talking about my producers, Adam Rosen and Dan Fortune, who I work with pretty closely. We thought that at the end of every season, we would do a charitable event to benefit a local New York City charity in something that was geared towards LGBT rights or LGBT equality. And what we came up with was this Night of a Thousand Judies, where we get lots of different Broadway people and, again, performance art people, lots of different folks, illustrators, and we do an evening of all Judy Garland music with 2 skits that is a 2-part parody of one of her movies. So we've done things from The Harvey Girls with Everett Quinton, which was amazing, or we did Meet Me in St. Louis, which was Meet Me in Detroit, which was great. And we kind of do these little sketches, and we raise about,
I think we've raised over $200,000 for homeless LGBT youth in New York.
For the queer community, there's always been, you know, Judy Garland and all the glamour of that. But for you in particular, what speaks to you about that era or those images?
Well, I grew up with those. I hung around with a lot with my grandmother when I was growing up, and that's why I have this voice. I had a stutter growing up. So she sent me to her friend who had a finishing school, and they taught me how to speak well. I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, and it was this exciting world that you were going to enter into. I kind of equated it with what it meant to be an artist, what it meant to be you're going to be interesting and know things to say at parties and, you know, kind of have a charmed life in a different way. It wasn't about money as much as it was about a certain kind of experience or a certain kind of style. And I've been very lucky, even when I haven't had money or when I have had money, to kind of always carry a sense of, oh, well, we're going to have a we're going to have great style about it regardless, you know, because to me, how somebody walks into a room or how somebody presents themselves can be magic. And I think that a lot of LGBT people, because we have to learn how to present ourselves in the world, can take that on as yet another canvas to kind of spread some of their own magic.
All right. How can people find out what you're doing, what you're doing next?
Facebook is a really good way to communicate with me. That's where I really put up a lot of stuff.
And do you have a YouTube channel?
We do, International Order of Sodomites.
And that is Sayre, S-A-Y-R-E. If you're looking for Justin, there's a lot of great stuff. It's really entertaining.
Oh, thanks so much.
And Sodomite is S-O-D-O-M-I-T-E.
Much merrier after their interview with Justin Sayre, Abby Deese and Wenzel Jones wanted to mention that his website is justinsayre.com. Thanks for tuning in to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. This week, Wenzel Jones, Michelle Yater, Abby Deese, and Judd Proctor and Brian Burns with John DeBoer contributed program material, with thanks as always to Steve Pride. You heard music from Disney's Mary Poppins, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, our contributing affiliate stations, and you, our listener donors, for making this program possible. It's always a good time to log on to thiswayout.org and join the family. Look for This Way Out on Facebook, Twitter, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and Google+. Smile at Overnight Productions on Amazon. Email tworadio@aol.com or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For Associate Producer Lucia Chappell and the entire This Way Out family, I'm Greg Gordon. We thank you for listening online at thiswayout.org and on KMUE, Arcata, Eureka, California, 3UGE, Alexandra, Victoria, WPKN, Bridgeport, Connecticut, and more than 200 other stations around the world, including this community radio station. Stay tuned.